Hi, this is Dennis Byrd, and you're listening to the 5%ers podcast, where we'll learn why it is that only 5% of people who lose weight never gain it back. I'll bring my expertise in life coaching, my advanced studies in psychology, and my own personal story of beating obesity so we can learn new ways of thinking and adopt powerful strategies to lose weight and keep it off for life. Thanks for joining me today, and you're listening to the 5%ers podcast, episode number 23, interview with Dr. Bert Herring, the creator of the Fast 5 Diet. Well, I hope that wherever you are today that you're just having a fabulous day. Here in Minnesota, it's absolutely beautiful. We've got blue skies, puffy clouds, sunshine, and it's just after a hard winter and a cold spring, it's just incredible to have great weather. So just in case, it's just that time of the year where people are doing outside projects, they got their lawnmowers running, they've got their saws running, kids are outside playing because school's out for a lot of kids, so you may be hearing a little background noise of, you know, machinery and tools and things like that, and, you know, hey, that's just what it is. I'll take it because it's summer, and I am so excited to have summer here. Normally, I don't propose, you know, anybody, you know, hey, here's the diet that you've got to do. Because so many different types of diets work for people. And the Fast 5 diet is something that I came across through a TED talk that Dr. Bert Herring had given on this particular diet. And although it's called a diet, it's more of a fasting protocol, an intermittent fasting protocol. So it's not necessarily about one way of eating or a type of foods that you should eat, but more of a protocol about how to eat in order to lose weight and to maintain weight. Now, I've been very interested in intermittent fasting over the last, I would say, year to 18 months as I began to learn about the benefits of intermittent fasting for weight loss and for weight maintenance. And I've actually have incorporated intermittent fasting into my lifestyle on a regular basis over the last 12 months. And I find that it works very well for me. And so it's been gaining popularity in the press and in the media. There's been books about intermittent fasting. There's one called the 5-2 diet, which we'll talk about today. But Dr. Bert Herring has a different philosophy of intermittent fasting. And while it's his philosophy, he also realizes that this may not be something that works for everyone. So if you're at a point in your weight loss where maybe you've stalled, intermittent fasting may be a protocol that works for you. If you are struggling with weight maintenance, intermittent fasting may be a protocol that works for you. And there's a variety of different protocols. And basically, the Fast 5 diet is a protocol that's working for a lot of different people. And I thought that this would be a great interview to bring to the show because Dr. Bert Herring, I think, has a really great perspective on the benefits of intermittent fasting, you know, the trials of intermittent fasting, you know, the societal implications and why intermittent fasting, I think, is looked down upon and so forth. And so I think you're going to find this a really great podcast. So I'm just going to go ahead and launch into the interview. Well, Dr. Bert Herring, thank you for joining me today on the 5%ers podcast.
Thank you, Dennis. I'm pleased to be here.
Yeah, well, it's just really going to be a great conversation today. The whole concept of intermittent fasting, I think, has really been growing over the last couple of years, especially on the internet and the blogospheres and different publications that I've been reading. And I know that you have a really interesting fasting protocol. And so I thought it would be you'd be a great resource for the people listening to my podcast. But before we get into your protocols, I wonder if you could just give us a quick overview of your background.
Sure. I started into the medical world at Texas A&M College of Medicine and went from there to the Navy and served in the Marine Corps for a total of 4 years. Mm-hmm. And then went from there to do cancer research at the National Institutes of Health. And that's where I had my first introduction to intermittent fasting, and it wasn't any kind of research protocol. It was something that I did to try to get more work done during my limited schedule, which was limited by childcare drop-off and pickup times. And mm-hmm. so I just started dropping lunch from my schedule so I could get a little bit more work done. And that went fine. And I realized that on the days I missed breakfast, I wasn't particularly hungry at lunch. And so I just kept it up for a while because it was practical and it was easy. And then after that, I had been doing that for a couple of weeks, and I noticed that the 20 pounds that I'd put on since leaving the Navy and the Marines was going away without me even having to think about it. And so I thought that was a pretty neat side effect of this schedule. And being a doctor, I didn't think twice about it being healthy or not. I considered it to be just a completely fine option to have all my intake during one part of the day. And since it saved time, it saved money, I was pretty happy with it. Mm-hmm. And so it was a few years after that that I realized that what was going on for me was something that could, if I looked into it, it might help other people. And it was in 2005 that I seriously started researching it. And that's when I was really surprised to discover there was this huge amount of research done on calorie restriction and intermittent fasting, but none of it was making it out to the public because there was really no money in it. And there was a lot of money on the other side encouraging people to eat, eat, eat. There's a lot of money behind that. And anytime something would come out that might support breakfast, there was plenty of money to push the PR and get it on the news. And so I realized that what we were hearing at that time was a very one-sided picture of what years, even decades back, going back to the 1930s, had been showing. And one of the critical bits of the chemistry involved in all of this was realizing not only was there this vast amount of research done on animals that supported the possibility that this could not just be as healthy as eating in the conventional three meals a day routine, but it could be healthier because the calorie restriction research has shown quite clearly that doing with less food could consistently and reproducibly extend the lifespans and health spans of many animals. So once I found out that there was research that could support what I was doing, could support others, that was in 2005 and 2006, released the book, The Fast Five Diet and the Fast Five Lifestyle. And it's been gathering fans ever since.
Yeah, well, I think what's interesting when you talk with people about intermittent fasting is that in our culture, we're so used to these three meals a day that it often seems extreme to people, that people just say, you know, seriously, like you skip breakfast and lunch, or, you know, isn't that unhealthy, or won't your metabolism slow down? And so I think there's a big concern in the general public that if you start on a fasting protocol, that it actually might be more detrimental than beneficial.
That is the consensus, and that is the mirage that's been created by the marketing from the breakfast industry. Until I started doing the research in this, I had no exposure to this sort of thing through medical school. Mm-hmm. And to find out that the one known way that animals could have an extended lifespan was not even taught to me in medical school, I was really surprised. And it really shows how siloed research and reality can be. Mm-hmm. And even the term intermittent fasting is kind of hard to get a handle on, because intermittent in one sense sounds like it's something that doesn't happen all the time. It's not consistent. You might not know when you're going to do it and when you're not. But that sense of intermittent applies to things like computers and electrical things that may have an intermittent short or something like that. But for intermittent fasting, it's proven to be quite reliable, quite practical. And depending on what schedule you use, it can be very consistent and very predictable.
Right. How would you define intermittent fasting?
Well, that's a very good question, and given it some thought, I would say any schedule of eating that extends the interval between meals to at least 12 hours would possibly get to the point where you start to see the benefits, the health benefits of intermittent fasting. But I think the minimum practical interval for that you could expect to see work for most people is at least 16, maybe 18 hours.
Mm-hmm. And then how did you come to the Fast Five diet and the 5-hour protocol?
Well, that goes back to my NIH schedule. What I started with was something that worked for me. Mm-hmm. And what then I started doing the literature research to see if it could work for other people. And so starting with my schedule at NIH, I was not eating breakfast. I was not eating lunch. I'd leave work. I'd pick up my daughter and then have break my fast at that point. So mm-hmm. I might want to call it breakfast. I tend to call it break fast to say that it wasn't a morning meal, which we assume to be what breakfast is. Mm-hmm. And so I would break my fast in the evening and eat whatever I wanted, as much as I wanted, until about 10 o'clock. And that's what worked for me. And so what I shared through the Fast 5 book was based on something that was already working for me. It had worked for some other people who were willing to try it out. And so it went from, it wasn't a theoretical thing that, oh, this should work. No, this was what was actually working and of what I had already been living with for some time and found to be very effective and practical.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the literature that you've reviewed, is there any magic about a 5-hour window or kind of the time period between meals? Is there, you know, kind of a continuum? They say, you know, you said between 16 and 18, but is the literature out there support that, or is this just based on experience and
no,
what works?
It's based on what works for an individual. Mm-hmm. And when I wrote the Fast 5 book, I did not intend to put anything in stone. The 5 hours was intended to be a starting point that people could adjust as they desired to balance the fit with their lives and the effectiveness. Mm-hmm. And I cannot look at any one person, and in fact, nobody can look at any one person and say, oh, well, you need this much time for your interval to see these certain results. This is a very individual thing. And with 6 billion people in the world, there are too many different combinations of food choices, schedules, mm-hmm. Genetic makeups, and family situations and so on to say that one thing is going to work for every person. And so what I encourage is for people to start somewhere and adjust as needed to see the effects that they should be having. And I wish I could just look at somebody or hear their story or see what their background is and say, oh, you need precisely this time, because I don't know. I don't want this to be any more restrictive or unpleasant or regimented than it has to be, because once social life often includes food, and the social life is as much a part of being healthy as choosing a decent diet. And so whatever works for somebody's life that gets them the results that they want is their custom tailored experimental solution. And that's where we get into what's called the study of one, where you mm-hmm. you experiment with your own biology, your life, your schedule, your needs, the food choices that you make, and find the result that works for you.
Right. Well, after watching your TED Talk on this topic, I went out to your website, and I went out to Amazon, and I actually bought your book for my Kindle. And what I really liked about your protocol is its simplicity. And I've read a lot of other books about fasting. In fact, there's out of England, there's an author, I forget his name, who's created the 5-2 diet.
And, right, Dr. Buss.
Yeah, and that, you know, and that's a protocol where, you know, 2 days a week you do maybe 500 to 600 calories a day, you know, spread out over, you know, two meals. And so you're doing that calorie restriction, you know, less often. But what I really, after reading your book and then doing intermittent fasting, I had been intermittent fasting for a year, but I had more of about an 8-hour window. You know, really eating from maybe around noon to 8. I had dropped 80 pounds in my life. And so it's not for me about weight loss. It's more about weight maintenance and just feeling good. And more importantly, I have a long history of diabetes in my family. And so about blood sugar control. And I find that when I'm intermittent fasting, you know, my blood sugars just are spot on. I mean, I don't really have any issues with those. But what I liked about the Fast 5 program was its simplicity, because I thought, you know, it's a lot easier just to say every day I'm only going to eat between these times and then I'm not going to eat outside of those times, versus 2 days a week having, you know, really having to work harder to limit the calories and really have to plan more strategically. So I think that's a real strength of your protocol.
Well, I've found it to be very, very livable and comfortable. And one of the things that goes into the silo that I mentioned earlier about research versus reality is that one of the reasons that a lot of that research didn't come out into the public was that it's one thing for caged animals to go without food because they don't have a choice. Nobody really thought that humans would tolerate a stretch of fasting that would be like every other day eating or something like that. And it turns out that it is a lot easier than people think at first glance that to go a few hours without food because our bodies can adapt so rapidly and so well. And so in order to get medical research done on the kind of schedules that we're talking about, whether it's 5 and 2, which has a little bit of human research for it, or time-restricted eating like we're talking about now with Fast 5, is now getting some research attention. It's the sort of the chicken and the egg. In order for a researcher to think we should research this, they've got to know that it's a credible, sustainable, practical thing that people will actually do. It wouldn't be of much help to do a lot of research on humans on something that, for whatever reason, might not be something they could actually do. And so finding out that people can actually do this, they can sustain it indefinitely. A lot of people who lose weight this way don't ever go back to eating 3 meals a day because they feel fine. They feel this continuous level of energy that they didn't have before. And like you said, it's very simple, uncomplicated, and easy to plan for. And with Fast 5, the recipe is, it's just limit food or limit eating to a 5-hour window, and that's it. There's no specifications that somebody has to remember beyond that. They look at their watch. It's either time to eat or it's not. And that sort of relieves them of the constant decision-making of should I eat this or should I eat that or should I eat this much of that or how much of this can I have and still maintain my calories. There's none of that. There's just doing it by time, and it has worked well for a whole lot of people. And I would like to say that Dr. Mosley's 5-2 diet, any sort of program that people find effective, I find wholly worthy of support. And his work in popularizing intermittent fasting has been a very big deal. The BBC helped him get a big boost. And the easier it gets, or actually the more people that know about intermittent fasting, makes it a whole lot easier for other people to get started in it. Because I don't know about for you, but the biggest resistance to getting started with IF is the crowd of people who say, oh my, that's not healthy. You shouldn't be doing that. Or you got to eat breakfast. You got to keep up your metabolism. And it can be very tiring to keep saying, no, that's not correct. That's just not correct. And that kind of social resistance is really the rate limiting step on a lot of people picking up something that could really work well for them.
Yeah. Well, I remember when I first started intermittent fasting, you know, my biggest concern was in my day job, I do a lot of public speaking and presentations and things like that. And I thought, well, geez, if I don't have breakfast, am I going to like pass out in the middle of my presentation or am I going to, you know, not have good focus? Mm-hmm. And what I found was it was actually the opposite, that when I was intermittent fasting, I was actually having better focus. I was actually had a level of energy that I didn't expect. And what I really think the biggest learning curve for me about this whole intermittent fasting protocol that I've been doing, and then in preparation for our interview for the last 2 months, I've been doing your protocol, so I've been shortening my window, is that what it's really teaching me is really what it means to be hungry. Because I think so often we're eating not because we're hungry, but because it's time to eat. You know, it's noon, so apparently I need to eat, whether you're hungry or not. And so by pushing it really I was doing, I think, a 4 o'clock to 9 o'clock window. What I found was at sometimes noon, I was thinking, well, geez, I'm kind of hungry. But then I realized, well, I'm not really hungry. It's just, it's noon. And so I think you talk about the difference between somatic hunger, and I think the other hunger that you more of a kind of mental limbic hunger. Yeah, Limbic hunger. Could you explain that just a little bit about the differences?
I use the term somatic hunger to describe the sensation of hunger where you feel like something's going on in your belly. It feels kind of tightish, maybe a little bit uncomfortable. And that's what we conventionally say, oh, well, I'm hungry. But there's also another sort of hunger where that's not going on in your belly, but you are still either seeking food or eating. And that's what's called limbic hunger, because limbic refers to the basic primitive part of the brain that takes care of the very primitive drives like eating, sex, breathing, and maintaining the very basic parts of staying alive. It's fairly disconnected from the cortical part of our brain where we do our thinking. And so to recognize that we have this brain that it's at our at the core that can essentially make us, and I think a lot of people have experienced this, they find themselves eating when they are at a thought level, they're choosing not to, but they still find themselves eating, or they'll be seeking food when they consciously choose not to. And that's sort of been the obese person's dilemma for a long time, is they're not choosing to be obese. Mm-hmm. Something is driving them to eat when they don't want to. And so identifying that there is a separate driver in the brain to eat that is separate from the conscious will to or not to eat is part of what we need to accept. And it is that primitive appetite that intermittent fasting seems to reprogram, reset the appetite so that you just don't want on either level. You don't want to have that level of food intake that is excessive.
Yeah. Well, and what I've found too is that it's teaching me what it really means to be hungry, because then there's times where I'm getting closer to my window of eating, and probably about a half hour before that, I'm like, you know, I think I'm honestly hungry. And so then when you do eat, you get a lot of pleasure out of your food. And then there's this sense of, at first when I went to a 5-hour window, I was like, ooh, man, it feels like I'm eating a lot. And I think in retrospect, it's not that you're just eating a lot, is that you're kind of eating a similar amount of food in a shorter window. And so it has a very kind of satisfying sense to it that, one, I don't really have to worry about what I'm eating. And I eat, you know, I'm not going out and having boxes of donuts and things like that. I mean, still eating a very healthy diet, because I found, you know, at least for me, I can't just go out and eat anything. I still have to keep a very balanced diet for healthy. And then that really sets me up for the next fasting window. But I do believe that there's this kind of this mental thing that you go through and you go, wow, it's like I'm actually eating a substantial amount of food, but you're probably still eating less than you would have if you would have spread those, you know, your diet over three meals.
Right. And one of the things that comes up a lot is that when people have all of their food within a window, the 5-hour window in this case, and they really get a chance to see what they're eating, and they tend to make better choices on what they eat, because there's no longer the whole rest of the day to make up for it. And there's been some decision-making research where if people have a choice to do something later, they'll choose the less healthy choice early, thinking that they will later choose better.
Interesting.
But they tend to not choose better later. But just by putting off the decision, they allow themselves the liberty to choose to make the poorer choice or the more self-indulgent choice first. But when the food is more lumped together, where you see it essentially in one 5-hour window or whatever you choose, then you make better choices. And one of the things you asked about earlier was, is there a significance to the 5-hour window? And my response was basically, whatever works is what it should be. And that goes for control of the appetite. To get the appetite reset, I don't have a lot of experience with the alternatives to Fast Five in the group of intermittent fasting protocols, because it works so well for me. I'm not really interested in changing.
Right.
I don't know if they come with some of the side effects that people have seen with Fast Five, which includes a lot of people have seen a decrease in inflammation and any kind of inflammatory disease, from things like psoriasis and eczema to myasthenia gravis, multiple sclerosis. A lot of people have reported improvements in those kind of inflammatory diseases, even and rheumatoid arthritis, general arthritis, which is osteoarthritis. Lots of people have reported that their aches and pains have diminished since starting the diet. And I don't know if they'll see that with a shorter window or not. And that's why I'm encouraged to see more scientific research being done that can look into this.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I think that's, as I really do a lot of, you know, reading into the whole area of health and wellness, I am seeing that keeping body inflammation low is kind of a key factor just to a lot of things, whether it's heart disease, diabetes, you know, these autoimmune issues and so forth. So when you just talk to a lot of other people, it does seem like kind of a crazy idea because we do live in this culture that's so, you know, saturated with food. And I know, like, when I go to my day job, I mean, there's food everywhere. You know, I walk by candy dishes every day. I walk by cookie trays every day. And I think that what really works for me, because I struggled with obesity for a long period of my life, and what I like about the fasting protocol is it's a lot easier to just pass by that stuff because it's not my time to eat. Mm-hmm. So you just like, well, you know, it's not my eating window, so I'm not going to have the cookie or I'm not going to have the candy. In general, I don't want to eat those things because I'm, you know, trying to keep my sugar content low. But in general,
right. I think that's wise.
Yeah, it's really the simplicity. And I thought that when I went to a, you know, kind of a 5-hour window, you know, like it would be unbearable. And maybe it's just because I had been, you know, went from an 8-hour window to 5-hour window. Is that sometimes it just even happens spontaneously, like just this last week, just based on my schedule and some things that came up to work, I didn't have my first meal till 3:00. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in later years, I would think, oh man, I'm just going to be running out of steam. I'm just, you know, not going to be able to be focused. And I find that when I'm fasting and maybe going, because there will be days I'll try to do a little longer fast. Every once in a while, I'll try to do a 20-hour fast, 24-hour fast. If I'm busy, I think it's no problem. If I'm not busy, that's where I find it gets a little tougher because you don't have things distracting your attention and so forth.
Right. The distractions certainly help. And that's why being careful about when you set your window, I think, is very important in getting started. And the other thing that's important is to cut yourself some slack getting started. Don't expect it to be able to start cold turkey and not feel at least a little bit of have a little bit of trouble along the way. Maybe it takes a couple of times to get started. And the other aspect is that it can take about 3 weeks or so for the appetite reset to kick in. So there's, unlike a lot of diets where you lose a lot of water weight early, you may see that with this, you may not. But you got to give yourself a chance to get started first and then worry about whether you're losing weight or not later. That'll start 3-4 weeks into it and be very steady. So it's adaptation first, then weight loss.
Right. Now, one of the things I was interested in is very physically active, you know, with weightlifting, running, and so forth. If people have intense exercise programs, like they're marathoners or, you know, high-intensity workouts and things like that, have you seen the Fast Five diet is, you know, will work with that, or do people need to make modifications? What have you seen?
It's completely compatible. Mm-hmm. And I think it is a testament to the incredible resilience and power of the human body to be able to do so much with what we are given as our bodies. They're just amazing machines. Mm-hmm. And when you consider that marathoners pump out 26 miles at about 15 miles per hour. I'm talking about world-class marathoners here.
Right, yeah.
They don't stop for a cheeseburger along the way. All that energy is there in their bodies to start with. And the typical human, even without extra pounds, can go for at least 3 weeks without eating and survive and bounce back and be completely normal. And with extra pounds, every pound makes about another day and a half, 2 days that a person can survive without any food at all. And people just really have been taught by culture and by marketing that their bodies are weak, they're frail, they're going to have fainting spells or something if they don't eat. That's not really the way the human body is. It is incredibly resilient, incredibly strong, and incredibly capable of doing some amazing things, and we just don't ever ask them to do it. We don't ever give them the chance.
Yeah. And what I've really been reading in my research around intermittent fasting is that when you aren't eating, it really gives your body the chance to just work on that cellular level, you know, to clean house, to repair and to regroup. And so, you know, I think I'm just really excited about seeing more and more research coming out of this, just because I know that it's really worked for me. And I think one of the things behind this whole podcast that I'm doing is that, you know, a lot of programs can get you to lose weight, and you can grit your teeth and you can restrict the calories, but they're not sustainable. And so the three things that I really look for in any kind of a plan is, one, first, is it working? Am I getting the benefits I want to get, whether it's losing weight or maintaining weight? Two, how do I feel? You know, am I feeling good on this program or this protocol? And then three, is it sustainable? You know, could I do this for the long term? And I've really found intermittent fasting, for me, works on all those three levels.
Right. Plus, it's got other benefits that, that don't even have to do with losing weight or maintaining weight.
Right. I've appreciated your time today. I just have a couple more questions, if that would be okay.
Sure.
So we've talked, you know, about your protocol. We've talked about intermittent fasting. Is there a group of people that intermittent fasting may not be good for?
The one that comes to mind is one that you've mentioned already, and that's diabetics. Somebody who is an insulin-dependent diabetic, or one who's taking some kind of oral medication, must be very careful and work with their doctor to start something like this, because if you were to just start dropping out meals without adjusting the medicine appropriately, that could cause some serious problems.
Right.
And so I think that diabetics can do this, and that they, if they're a type 2 diabetic, then losing the weight may get them to the point that they're no longer diabetic. But getting started and getting into the program really should be done under doctor supervision, so that any kind of medications can be appropriately adjusted to make sure it's safe.
Yeah, absolutely. My dad was diabetic growing up, and it's pretty tricky stuff to maintain your blood sugars, and you definitely would want to be working with a physician at that point. Any other types of people that
I'd like to add that once they get there, I think a diabetic's management may be easier with only one food bump of glucose rather than three, and so
right.
So it may make life easier for a diabetic once they can make the transition, but again, only with a doctor's supervision.
Yeah, and some of the just different websites I've been to and different things I've read, I do hear some feedback that some women don't do very well. Is there a difference between men and women in their ability to have intermittent fasting work for them based on hormonal differences or anything?
I haven't seen any legitimate science behind the argument that women are somehow less capable of getting benefits from intermittent fasting than others. In fact, most of the people that I talk to related to Fast Five are women who are successful with it and are having a great time finding something that works for them. And
right.
So what the motivation is behind that, I'm not sure, but when I look for the scientific basis that it comes from, it looks pretty shaky and exaggerated. So what exactly can happen? Men do seem to have an easier time losing weight, and that's fine. Women have a good reason that they need to be a little bit more concerned about the weight that they, the amount of fuel that they carry, because of the possibility of having us bring all of a sudden demanding more fuel. And so it makes sense that it's a bit more difficult for women, and I think that that's true that it is. A lot of men start Fast Five and see just instant weight dropping off.
Right.
That doesn't go for everybody, but generally it's a pretty quick and easy tool for men. And for women, it takes to a bit more diligence. The weight may be a little slower to come off. Mm-hmm. They may hit plateaus more often, that kind of thing.
Right.
And so, yes, there's a difference, but should it keep a woman from trying it? I don't think so. Because, I mean, look at the benefits. The difference between living a life, both for your body and your enjoyment of life, there's a lot to be gained by achieving the weight that you would like to have. And that can really set people free who've been sort of imprisoned by their own body and unable to change it. So when you look at the risk and benefits, it looks like a whole lot of benefit, and I don't see much in the way of risk.
Oh, yeah, and absolutely. I mean, not carrying around 80 pounds, which I've lost, is immense. I mean, I my health is in such a radically different place. And, you know, I think ultimately what I'm a big believer in, it is the N of one, the experiment of one. And so I really just encourage people that are listening that if you've thought about intermittent fasting, if you have thought about maybe trying an intermittent fasting protocol, to really check out Bert's, book, The Fast Five Diet, his website, and so forth, just because I think it's a really interesting protocol. And I'm just a big believer that you try it, and if it's working, great. If it's not working, tweak it a little bit, see if maybe a little larger window works better for you, or maybe even a shorter window. But I'm just really big on experimentation, because I think that the more we experiment with these things, the better clarity we get about what really works for us. And ultimately, we have to do what works for us.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And the more people are doing it, the easier it gets for other people to start. And that's a big key.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've just had tremendous success with intermittent fasting, and I've really seen a lot of benefits. And so it was just really great to talk with you today. I really appreciate you taking some time out of your day to share with my audience just about the Fast Five Diet. How would people find out more about you, about the Fast Five lifestyle, the Fast Five book, and so forth?
Well, the book is a free download. It's a very short book because there's not a lot to say about it. Mm-hmm. It's at fastfive.org. That's FAST, then a hyphen, then the numeral 5.org, O-R-G.
Okay.
And so they can download the whole book or read a summary there. And I'd invite them to join the Facebook groups that are linked to there. There's a couple of thousand people in the private group and something like 1,500 in the public one. So there's a lot of people you can talk to about Fast Five, ask questions if you have problems. If you want to find somebody in your area, you might find somebody there. Lots of resources there.
Great. And I'll put all the links in the show notes on my website as well. So if people are looking to find you, they can just click on a link and it'll take you right to them. And then also, if you go to Amazon, I believe you can get your book either in paper form or Kindle form if you want to read it that way as well.
Right. If you want the hard copy or Kindle version, that's true.
Yep. And I got the Kindle version just because I like having portability. So, well, Bert, I really appreciate your time today. And again, we'll put all the links to your website and your book in the show notes. And just best of luck. And is there anything that we should be looking out for in the future from you as far as TED Talks or speeches or anything like that you'd like people to know about?
Well, what I'm working on now is a follow-up book to the TED Talk, which is based on the Did I Enrich Today? And I hope to have that out sometime this summer. It's turned into a bigger project than I initially thought it would be, because I've learned more and there's more things to offer. So,
oh, great.
I'm looking forward to getting that out.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to reading it. Well, thanks again for your time, and just have a great day, Bert.
Thanks very much for inviting me. It's been a great talking to you.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening today. And if you found this podcast helpful, let your friends and family know about it. And if you will, go to iTunes and find the 5%ers podcast and leave a review and let other people know how it's been helpful. And if you want to know more about being a 5%er, you can go to my website at dennisbird.org. And remember, folks, when it comes to your health, work hard, do your best, and never give up. Have a great day, everybody.